It's our job. We'd like drive around, pick up stiffs or what? Is that what we're supposed to do? Hey, Chuck, who's this? Wife?
Fiance. Oh.
Nice frame. Yeah, okay. We can make stuff. We can read. Coffee. This is great. I like it. You wonder why I carry this tape recorder? It's to tape things. See? I'm an idea man, Chuck. All right? I get ideas all day long. I can't control them. It's like they come charging in. I can't even fight them if I wanted to, you know? Ah. So I say them in here, and that way I never forget them. See what I'm saying? Okay, here's an example. Watch out. Stand back. This is Bill. Idea to eliminate garbage. Edible paper. See? Eat it. It's gone. Eat it. It's out of there. No garbage.
Hello and welcome to Stuff We've Seen. This is Jim, and now, here he is, that rare time when the sequel is better than the original, Teal. How's it going, buddy?
Good, good. So I'm Godfather 2 is what you're saying?
Yeah, you're like Godfather 2 or Aliens, which I prefer to the first one. That doesn't mean
really?
Anything. Yeah, I'm a big
Aliens
fan.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yep, I know. So you learn something new about me every day.
What do you think about the director's cut of Aliens? You ever seen that?
Yes, I have. well, I'm laughing because it just reminds me of a story. It's been so long. It was like right as I graduated from college.
Right.
And there, it was this weird kind of time a couple of weeks before I left New York City. School was out, but I was still living in my apartment, hadn't moved to California. And there was this girl that I knew from film class, and I ran into her on the street. And I think her name was Jenny Hughes or something. And she was kind of like hanging around, didn't have anything to do. And we just started hanging out for a couple of nights. Like she was coming, I don't know where, I can't remember where she lived. I think she lived way uptown, but she came down to my apartment and like we hung out, went to the movies. And then one night, I said something about, she like mentioned she was a big Aliens fan. And then I said, oh, you know, I had this friend who taped the director's cut off of his laser disc on a video. And, you know, we can watch it. And so I remember we watched it on like my little TV on a VHS and, you know, enjoyed it at the time. But, you know, it's not necessary to see it, I don't think.
No, it's not necessary to see it. It's basically got a bunch of deleted scenes put back in.
Well, yeah, it tells the kind of the story of Newt's family, right? When they're like sort of colony on there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it tells more of that story. It has more backstory on Ripley's character. I think there's a scene with her mother.
Yes, and I like that. But I mean, the problem is that the construction of the story and why something like what happened to Newt's family. That's what it was. Newt was
right.
The girl.
Yes, Newt is the girl, yeah.
Is that it gives it away. You mean it's more of a fun mystery to see, well, what happened here?
Right. And not have it all revealed there and go through it with the character. Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think like it's just interesting that Cameron wrote the script with all of that stuff. And to make the movie effective, really, it had to go, I think. I think the director's cut is less effective. Like you said, it's the mystery. There's more tension to it. But, you know, Cameron tends to do this. I also remember on Aliens, he wrote like a 10-page backstory for every single character and had them memorize it and learn it. So I think he has a tendency to sort of go overboard.
Yeah, well, it's the process of making the film. There's a lot that goes into it before you see whatever the cut that gets into theaters is, right?
And exactly.
I think it's sort of that thing with the Peter Jackson and the Lord of the Rings. There's all of these details that are there whether you see them or not, But the full right. effect is that it brings you into a world that if you strip those away, the world wouldn't feel as real as it did to so many millions of people.
Right. What do you think about those director's cuts?
I haven't seen those. I mean, you know, look, how much Lord of the Rings do you need? It's funny is...
I don't know. Maybe your kids weren't into it.
No, that's the thing. They watched the Lord of the Rings. We watched that a couple of years ago, but that was the only thing available on streaming.
Okay.
And then they added the next two. We're about halfway through Return of the King, and, you know, one was already losing interest. The older one, he was kind of like going back over to his computer. And and the little one, you know, was kind of, I kept on saying that the big battles are coming. And it's just right. not, it's just not as interesting to them as it was to them. But I was never that big a fan. I mean, I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. Every year when they came out and on the holidays, I yeah. remember my uncle and his wife, they got together with me and my ex-girlfriend. And we would see them. It was almost like the event to right. see them all together. But I wasn't that excited about the first movie. I really liked the second one and I liked the third, but they just weren't my
they're not big your bag, thing. Man.
No. You know, I mean, I like them, but I'm not a huge fantasy guy, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, I enjoyed those movies. I saw the director's cut. I enjoyed those. However, you know, 15 hours that is or something. It's not really that long, but it's a good chunk of time. And
yeah.
But I watched them all and I enjoyed it. And I kind of, but my kids started to get interested. Oh, because they were playing a Lord of the Rings video game. And
see, it starts with the video games for the kids.
Starts
right?
with the video games. Yeah. So then we started watching. They got bored about halfway through the first movie.
Well, the first movie is a little slow. Yeah. And I remember when I saw it, I was so surprised at how big a hit it was because when you really break it down, there isn't that much going on in that first movie.
There's a lot of talk.
But everything that was good about those three films, it was almost like it was lightning in a bottle or something because when Peter yes. Jackson then goes back and he makes the Hobbit movies.
And it's a disaster.
Those three films are horrible.
Yeah.
And I say that with peace and love. but I'll tell you why. Because he took a small book. And it could have been one, maybe 2.5 hour film.
Yeah, it's a pretty small book.
And then, you know, at best, right? At best, the two film strategy that originally was supposed to be, okay.
But three?
Yeah, well, so the first movie, literally the first hour and 40 minutes of that film is the setup of what you would get in the first 10 to 15 minutes of any other movie.
Right.
It's amazing. It only really gets going when he runs into Gollum.
Yeah, I have not seen the movies. So.
Oh, you haven't? Now.
No. Well, again, I started watching it. My kids said, I don't want to watch this.
Oh, so, I mean, and then the second film, the highlight, and it really is amazing, is the Smaug. Dragon.
Right. Okay.
And then there's a little bit of like basically he stretched out and put all this other stuff into it, making these epics, blah blah blah. But if you strip all that out and you just put in what the book was, then you might have something.
Yeah, and I read the book recently, and I can't imagine trying to turn it into three-hour movies.
Oh, and then of course you know we talked about this I think on the last episode with the high frame rates.
Right. So, yes, we did talk about that on the last episode.
I was really excited when I heard that this first movie was going to be in the high frame rate, and I searched out a theater
right.
to see it in, and it was a freak show. Especially the first one, because he really was almost like a straight output to the 48 frames, and he didn't do any kind of overlays to give it a film look. And right. everything that was so magical about the Lord of the Rings movies looked fake. Like everybody looked like they were wearing makeup and a wig and sets.
Right.
It didn't look real. So even though the visual was supposed to give this like immersive real effect, it was freaky and movements looked really strange.
Yeah, that, well, our eye is just not used to watching visual entertainment in that medium, in that frame rate, in that weird, it does make, I think it actually works well for documentaries.
Well, of course, but I think this is what Ang Lee is trying. He's trying to understand that to do it right, you have to almost relearn how to make films, because you'd yes. have scenes that you'd normally shoot with your 24 frames per second cameras, of people running in action. And then you have it at the 48 frame rate, and it's almost look like, you know, Buster Keaton moving like, you know, early talkie. Like, it just didn't look real. It was weird. So I think that the way that you made films and you got away with it because you learned that language didn't translate to the higher frame rate. It just looked bizarre. So, and I don't know if it's gaining any kind of popularity where they're going to invest too much time in getting it right.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if anybody else starts doing this.
Well, isn't that what the whole thing, and we, I think this is where we got into,
yeah.
James Cameron, right? Isn't he shooting all of those 20 Avatar movie sequels in the high frame rate?
Probably. And they're going to be 3D too. So, you know, the frame rate works differently. If anyone can pull this off, I believe actually in James Cameron because...
Right. Because every time we've counted that guy out...
Yes.
You know, but boy, well, it's going to make those studios nervous because a lot's changed since the last Avatar.
A lot has changed. Yeah. And I'm not expecting necessarily the stories of these movies to be great. I mean, Avatar, I think, is a pretty lame story, but he pulled off.
You mean Ferngully? Oh, no. Wait a minute.
You mean Dances with Wolves?
Yes. Dances with Ferngully.
Yeah. Dances with Ferngully is exactly what it is. Speaking of, my kids have no interest in watching that movie.
Which one?
Avatar.
Oh, you know, my kids, they didn't want to rewatch it over and over again, but man, they loved it.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, okay. You know, my oldest saw it. We got a Blu-ray, and we used to have a 3D TV.
It
broke. And they don't really make, you know, the 3D TV thing didn't really work out. People didn't like it, but boy, I got to tell you, it really, we had these like super cool glasses that you wore with them. And it's a little hard to watch something like that at home, but it was really good. And he saw that in a 3D, which to me is the only way you see it. If you can't see it in 3D, it doesn't really grab you.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's designed as an experience in a way. Is it cinema? I don't know.
Well, you know, Cameron kind of bridges that gap a little bit because, you know what, if it was just, well, I was going to say, if it was just all an action fantasy movie, it wouldn't be one of the biggest films of all time. But then, you know, Marvel just people just go see anything for 3 hours. It's, you know, Tony Stark with some teardrops. I don't know. Okay, so listen, this is what it's funny how quickly we get off track by something I say as an intro.
We didn't get off track. We just started on the wrong track completely.
Yeah,
we were never on the right track.
Well, just shows you, like, you know, for someone who's listening to this program, they're like, well, geez, how scripted is this? It's not.
It's not.
We just went right into it, but I wanted to just talk about a couple of quick hits of some movies that I saw.
That you've seen. Good.
And some of it I want to recommend to you, and I'm not going to get into them. I just want to tell you, this is what I've been seeing. So I saw a second Herschel Gordon Lewis movie, The Gore Gore Girls, instead of Go-Go Girls.
And that's pretty much the concept, right? They're Go-Go Girls with gore?
Yeah, this was the last movie he made for 30 years before he made a sequel to Blood Feast.
Okay.
It basically is the movie that stopped him dead in his tracks. It is, pound for pound, the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Now, you've been saying that on this show a lot.
I know, but this really is.
What about that Michael J. Fox high school movie?
Different type of, this is worse in many ways, but it's the kind of really bad movie, I think, like that Tommy Wiseau film, The Room, which I haven't seen, that it's the worst movie I've ever seen, and yet I want to show it to people because they won't believe it. I mean, because it shows such a lack of film ability. They had a cameraman. I had to look this up. Right? It was driving me up. I thought that the transfer that the Criterion had was whatever existed and that someone took a 16mm print and then they blew it up to 35. And that's why the heads were cut off.
Okay.
And it just, like, a lot of the framing was so terrible. But no, guess what? It was actually shot in 35mm film, but it was shot by an Iranian cameraman. I don't know how experienced as he was, but I was thinking this is what must have happened. He was looking through the viewfinder, and you know how they have all the little...
Right, there's the safe area.
And I think that he looked at the big square, shot that. And then when they went to transfer to 35, because they didn't know anything related to that, then the heads were cut off. because the guy didn't even know what he was doing.
So the whole movie is framed wrong?
Well, sometimes it isn't. Depending on what it's, you have to see it. Sometimes the camera, like, which is always almost always on it, like a tripod, it clumsily moves up to capture some action that's happening. And I mean, this was definitely John Waters was like a huge fan because I feel like there's a kinship to Pink Flamingos in about it.
I feel like I have to see this and then we have to just shamelessly promote it.
You will not. But there's something like I understand why it's almost like you can't believe somebody made this movie. It's supposed to be sort of funny in a comedy, right. Yet there's somebody that's taking their hand and reaching and ripping apart someone's face, and they must have had a run on sheep eyes in this film. I can't explain it. There's a part where somebody cut somebody's nipple off, and what? In one of the nipples is milk comes squirting out, and they get a glass, right? What? And then the other one, they cut the other nipple off, and chocolate milk comes out. So the person has two kinds of milk, and then the same person who's done this takes their hands, takes two champagne glasses that have the milk, and clinks it together. And it feels like the worst student of film imaginable.
No.
Yeah. This really is what
does the film have a premise?
Yes. Somebody is killing go-go dancers at this go-go club. And there's this guy, I forget his name, something gently. And he is this suave, debonair private detective who's going to solve the case with this intrepid female reporter who he keeps getting drunk with these zombies made of tequila. I'm not kidding. So, this is the most inappropriate, weird movie.
So please tell me this is less than an hour and 15 minutes long.
It's like an hour and 20 minutes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You can bang this one out.
Okay. And longer than that would just be unbearable.
But there's so much more. There's this editing. They try to do these things to like have these effects, but the editing is so bad. Like someone throws themselves out of a window and and then they get completely run over by a car and squished. But it's so poorly done that you're like, wait, what just happened here? It makes no sense.
Okay. I'm going to watch this and then we're going to talk about it again on the show because I have to see this movie.
It's a treasure.
Okay, so what else you got?
Well, I got another really bad thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so you wouldn't understand this, I don't think, because you didn't watch TV as a kid.
Right.
But I did, and I grew up with this show called The Banana Splits.
Never heard of it.
Okay, and it's basically...
No, I've heard
of it. Oh, you have? Okay.
Yeah, but I've never seen it. Yeah.
Okay. But you know what it is. And it was,
generally, yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, for kids my age, it was this big thing, and you grow out of it and you forget about it, okay? And I think there's been, I guess, some revivals of it, maybe on Boomerang, which is the channel, Hanna-Barbera channel, and that's what the Banana Splits were. So a few months ago, in the summertime, I don't know, so I saw something on the internet. Somebody had done, like, this fake trailer for a horror movie on the Banana Splits, but, like, the Banana Splits go crazy and kill.
Okay.
And I thought, and I watched the little fake trailer, right? And it took, like, the music from it, and it slowed it down, and I thought, okay, that's, you know, haha, that's kind of funny. So then, a couple weeks ago, my wife says, oh, this thing that's on sci-fi, it turns out that was a real movie.
It wasn't a fake trailer.
It wasn't a fake trailer. Somebody's made a horror movie about the Banana Splits being these robots that were out of control. And so we watched this. It is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Wait, now... which one is worse, that or Gorgor Girls?
No. You know what? Gorgor Girls is the worst movie I've ever seen. However, I would watch it again in a heartbeat over this Banana Splits movie, which was just bad for like, it just was just ill-conceived and not scary. You could care less. I just wanted to mention that
so
there
was
actually a thing.
So what you're saying is that Gorgor Girls is actually kind of good.
Well, it's like Troll 2. It's the best, right. Worst movie.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay, so enough of that crap. All right, I did see the movie that we had mentioned last show, which was I saw Robert Eggers' The Lighthouse.
Yes.
I had to travel a good hour and a half to go see it because I really wanted to see it in the theater. And
right.
I'm just don't want to tell you anything about it. We'll get into it when you have seen it, but you got to see it.
Okay.
It's not my favorite movie. It just, you know, because it didn't really have that much of a story. It's kind of like, oh, I get, this is what the story is going to be. But style over substance, this thing has style like you wouldn't believe.
Okay, so I, yeah, wow.
It's amazing. It's an amazing piece of film.
How am I going to get to this movie?
Well, you may have to wait till it streams, I guess, or however you get your at-home content.
When's it going to be streaming?
I don't know. I just know that it's a theater experience, because if you can see...
I want to see it on a big screen. I could probably drive an hour and see it. There is a theater about an hour away.
Well, it's less than it took me to get there.
It's less than it took you, so that may be worth it if your recommendation is that serious.
I think you'd really enjoy it.
Okay.
Well, did you like The Witch?
Yes.
Okay, well, this I like this more in some ways than The Witch, only because the level he went to achieve this look of a film that he wanted to tell the story.
Right.
I just commend that, because that's what I'm always saying when someone shoots a film that's set in the 50s, but they shoot it on digital video, you know, like like Green Book. It looked like somebody shot it today. And yet I always say, well, I wonder if somebody really took the time to really try to make it feel like, well, what would this have looked like if it was shot in the 1960s? Let's make it look like that.
Didn't they do this with that movie, The Good German?
Yeah, you know, Soderbergh tried. I think he failed. I feel like that's a noble failure. He tried to do that with techniques, but even the problem was he did all this rear screen projection, but he used like modern techniques, so it looked like a modern film doing that.
Okay, I just remember they were using older cameras on that.
For some reason, Robert Eggers felt to tell this story of the 1890s at this lighthouse and these lighthouse keepers that he wanted to shoot it as if it was maybe a film made in the early sound era.
Right. And so he really technically went for that look.
Except for in the sound. The sound is modern day sound, and that's very effective because you get this really, immersive. And I'm good with that, right? So the immersive sound and the waves crashing, and you just get that very claustrophobic atmosphere.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because he could have gone mono.
Right. But I felt like, honestly, I felt at times like I was watching an Ingmar Bergman film.
Yeah, interesting.
It looked like some kind of foreign film that just happened to be not foreign, but you just would never imagine that it was made in 2019.
Interesting. Okay. I will be making some kind of journey to see that.
But I did a double feature.
Yeah.
All right, because I was going to go an hour and a half to go see this movie.
You might as well do a double feature, yeah.
And this theater was playing all sorts of goodies that my theater won't. You know, for some strange reason, my theater, this Friday, it can't get The Lighthouse, and it can't get Jojo Rabbit. It couldn't even get The Current War, which is like this, you know, film that kind of is making its rounds. But it can get Emmerich's Midway this Friday.
Is that an actual movie? I saw a trailer for it yesterday, and I mean, I don't. And it's something about TV ads for movies. Sometimes they don't look like real movies.
Well, it's like that Banana Splits thing. It really was real, and Midway is real, and it looks real terrible.
It looked like I just couldn't take it seriously. So I guess that's, Emmerich, of course, making these historical epics. He's always so good at being at a historical verisimilitude. Okay, so you had a double feature, because we're running out of time, and we're finally getting to what the show's about.
Yeah, we're not going to run. We're on schedule. Okay. Trust me, I'm having a good time. We're going to keep this thing. We're going to keep this train rolling until we cover all the topics. So, all right. But I had like three or four movies I would have seen at this place, but I could only see two because of the way the timing worked out. It didn't time in for any other films. But I got to see another film that I've been dying to see, heard all about it, and that is Bong Joon-ho's Parasite. And I know that you were able to get to see it as well.
I was able to get to see it, yes.
And we have not talked about it. I told you I saw it, and you were able to see it, and now we're going to talk about it. And I don't know who wants to go first.
Okay, I want to get something out of the way.
We should talk about this part, right, that we're going to maybe spoil it a little bit?
We are definitely going to spoil it. I just have something based on my own ignorance that I have to find out about.
Okay.
Is how do you say this guy's name? Is it?
I think it's Bong Joon-ho.
Okay, Bong Joon-ho.
I think it's Bong Joon-ho. Yeah, okay. But I don't know.
Because sometimes he's credited as Joon-ho Bong.
That may be That may be a Korean thing.
That's what I think it is. So yeah. I just want to make sure I'm doing the best job I can.
Thanks. I'm sure Boone will appreciate it. Or June. June or Boone. But okay. I'm sure he will appreciate it when he hears the show.
He will definitely be listening to the show. Can't wait to find out what we think of his movie.
Yes. I think it was better than Okja.
I would agree. It was better than Okja.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it could be his best film to date. I've seen several of his movies.
Have you seen Mother?
I haven't seen that, but I have seen Snowpiercer, Okja, and The Host.
Okay. Yeah, I would... See, I love this guy. I've loved him since
The Host. I know you really liked Okja.
I really liked Okja. I loved Snowpiercer. I think I liked... A lot of people liked Snowpiercer, but I think I liked it more than a lot of the people I talked to.
I liked it more than a lot of people. I thought it was fantastic.
Okay. And I loved Mother. And yeah, Okja... Okja, to me, was not as good as Snowpiercer, but I did really like it. Yeah, I liked Okja a lot. And I like how he, in all of these movies, I guess he's using big, broad, allegorical strokes. And that's what I like, is sort of how over-the-top his messaging is at times, and how he can find sort of big moments in performances and sort of play things out on this allegorical level. And so that everything works as drama and as humor, but it's also his messaging is big. He's trying to say something with every movie, and he pulls it off, I think.
Well, I think sometimes when you're watching a foreign film, you know, you get a glimpse into, at least the best ones, you get a glimpse into what is going on in that country.
In that culture, yeah.
Yeah, and you learn something new about, oh, well, this is what, you know, this is different than my own culture.
Right.
And I found Parasite fascinating from the standpoint is it really, there's a definite political slant to the film, and it gave you some insight into the class struggle in South Korea.
Yeah.
And I felt, though, it was a very accessible movie in that... not every foreign film, and sometimes it's a little struggle, not struggle right. to read the subtitles, but to really connect with what I'm reading and also connect with the characters. But
right.
there was something that happened in this movie within like 5 minutes. It was almost like I could understand Korean. I don't know how to explain it, but like I was so focused on the performances and what they were saying and their voices and like the distinct characters. It wasn't like this mesh to me.
Right. Yeah, and I actually, it's funny, I had this moment when I was watching the film, and I was remembering a scene that had happened a few minutes earlier, and I remembered the dialogue as though it was being spoken in English.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's amazing. And he has this one, I don't know the actor's name, but the guy who plays the father.
I was just going to say, this guy's face is so...
Well, he's in his movies. He's in Snowpiercer,
yes.
And he was in Okja. He's the you know, the peasant father of the kid with the Okja.
Yeah.
He's great. But, I mean, every single performance in this movie was interesting.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, there was something going on inside these characters on a deeper level. Yeah, every performance was interesting. There was not... Okay, maybe the least interesting.
Okay, for you, is the least interesting was who?
Was the teenage girl.
Which teenage? You mean the one that he was tutoring?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe, but I was invested in every little storyline going
yes,
on.
Yes, I was too. I was totally invested, and I was invested in every character in a way that I found myself kind of rooting for all of them. It would have been really easy to make the upper class family almost villainous or cold and selfish, and
that's
they were all.
What is so fascinating is this movie is so well done that it takes it rides that line of where you feel like we've run into this story before. It's upstairs downstairs story in a sense,
yeah,
in many ways. And
no, it is. It's upstairs, but
there's like even more than yeah.
Upstairs, downstairs, downstairs.
Yeah, upstairs, downstairs, sub-basement and basement.
Sub-basement and basement.
But it could ride the cliche, and in every place where you feel like, oh, I've seen this scene, he yeah. finds new ways to take scenes that you thought you've seen before and make them different. And you actually, here's what I found was fascinating from the get-go,
yeah.
was that you're, a lot of times you're in the point of view of a family and you may be focusing on that upper class family. And then you have this, you see it from their side only.
Right.
And then these other, you know, people come into their lives and there's something going on there. And usually it's played for a dark, scary, almost horrible film, right? It's like a horror film.
Yes, absolutely.
But in this case, we actually start with the other side and we see them infiltrating the rich family. And it's interesting because they, like you said, they don't make the villains out of the rich family. You never really hate them.
Well, there aren't. It's really hard to find a villain in this movie. There really isn't one. They're all sort of products of their class and where they're where they are in society, and they're not really. Nobody is really of ill intent. I guess. I mean, they are.
Right.
They're con artists, but at the same time, you know, I kept thinking during the movie, they're running a con, but they're actually all working really hard.
Well, okay, so that's another fascinating facet of this film is that it's like acting. They are playing roles.
Yeah.
And so you get this understanding of like the people that are your servants.
Right.
Right. They are playing a part because they're getting paid. And then when they're not in your care, they may be completely different people. And of course, this movie really brings that message home.
It does, but there's something really powerful in this movie that it was sort of subtle at first, but it ended up being really powerful to me was the way the father smells.
Yes, because that's eventually what that's like a key thing that drives someone over the edge at the end.
And it's a key thing in the plot, but it's also sort of how no matter what role he puts on, he can't escape the fact that he's from the sub-basement.
Yep.
Right. And I think the sister says at some point, oh, it's the smell of the sub. You know, they're talking about using different soap and doing their laundry separately so they smell differently. And she says, no, it's the smell of the sub-basement. And it's like, that's something innate to him that he can't escape.
And he can't recognize the smell himself.
No, not at all. He keeps smelling himself throughout the movie.
And you know what? When that gets brought up, right? Then there's the thing. I mean, again, we're for those who haven't seen Parasite, which may be a lot of people, I caution that you might want to click off or go ahead just because there's some very interesting developments that we have to just talk about. And once they start introducing that whole thing with scent, it's like my nose is starting to think. So when I watch the scenes that happened with the flood.
Oh, yes.
I'm thinking constantly about how does that make these characters smell, right? With the toilet and all this. It's like
the exploding toilet.
Suddenly this guy. And so, you know, it's funny. Just when we're breaking this down, we're talking about it. There's the experience of seeing the movie and my first impression, but then it's the talking about it now to realize, my God, what the hell? This movie has so much going on.
It's got so much. Yeah, it's so layered and it's also so refined. There aren't a lot of loose ends. There aren't a lot of things that aren't very well thought. Basically, everything I felt like was well thought through and designed in such a way to really elicit certain responses from the audience and to get us thinking. Yeah, my experience of the film was for the first hour, I realized I had a smile on my face the entire time. And it was just because I was so happy to be watching a movie this good.
We like to talk about how we go into films cold or not cold.
Yeah.
And I went into this film, I feel like maybe 85% cold, because what I did know was that there was maybe a class struggle and that there was something to do with this family that might be kind of con artist and they kind of infiltrate this rich family's home and that the home is kind of a character. I knew that much. And
that's
that was
more
it.
Than I knew.
And I know, right. And you didn't know anything, which was really fun.
Well, what I knew, no, I knew that it was about a family that leeches off another family.
Yeah. Like I said, I knew that a little bit more, but luckily I didn't know any of the things that happen. I just knew that, you know, because I can break down the understanding of movies that I just got a sense that there was got to be some stuff that was getting people talking.
Yeah.
I didn't know what those were. And so I myself, as the film unfolded, was taken for a little bit of a surprise ride.
Well, it definitely...
The second act of that movie is not what I thought things were going to happen.
No, it turns into essentially starting from when the family leaves for the camping trip.
That's when it all starts to change, yes.
That's when it all starts to change, and it enters into this sequence, which is horrific, comedic. There's a lot of character stuff when they're just hanging around before.
It's the most brilliant direction right there, this whole sequence, because
yeah,
there's some things with like people hiding and whether they're going to get discovered. That's the cliche part that we've seen before.
Right.
And yet this is so much different going on because of all the things that, you know, we were trying to maybe avoid telling everybody all this
exactly
stuff.
But it has different meaning because, well, like when they're hiding and the father of the rich family says, I smell Mr. Kim.
Yes.
Right. It has a whole different meaning than just he's going to get found out. Right. There's a class being talked about there. There's emotional stuff going on, and it's very different than just the tension of somebody hiding. And well, for instance, when they find one character has been hiding, instead of him, they just take his character in a really interesting direction with the Morse code and everything. The guy who's been hiding out in the basement for 4.5 years. Yes. And he knows how many months and days and weeks too. So, but that guy is he's not a creepy villainous type. In fact, he's done something really strange, which is sort of turned the father of the family into his personal hero and savior. And I mean, that Morse code thing is just amazing. And it's such a good setup for the end. But yeah, so during that sequence, now there was a movie that I started thinking about during that sequence. And it's a movie that we saw earlier this year that we talked about on the show. And I think needs to be talked about in comparison to Parasite.
Well, what's that?
Us.
You know, it's because of the basement aspect and sort of the class struggles and...
Yes.
Exactly. Or maybe it's in that, look at how much better a movie Parasite is.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Because I thought Us was pretty heavy-handed.
Us is incredibly heavy-handed. At the end of the day, didn't add up to much. But in the center of it has this sort of action-type sequence. Not an
true
action.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And so it's played out in this through violence, right? Some of the class struggle is played out through violence. So that was sort of the centerpiece of Us. And in Us, it focused on the rich family.
Yep.
Right. And so it was a very different kind of movie. But I felt like it was exploring some of the same territory and doing it in kind of an incoherent way compared to Parasite. Parasite is so sharp and so on point in terms of the filmmaking. You had mentioned to me the one spoiler you had given me was that the movie was well composed.
Well, I knew that was, I had to throw some bait to make sure that you were going to, because I knew that, you know, well, it, because again, it's another thing that we always talk about. Why are you choosing a certain aspect ratio to shoot a movie? And is it because, I just like movies that are widescreen, or is there an intention? And what I read up on why he chose the composition to do widescreen was that there was so much interaction with four characters that he needed a canvas to spread them out the right way.
That's interesting. Okay, yeah.
Because if you shoot in 1.85 and you have those four characters, it's very tight and cramped.
Right.
And you can see the way he shoots the family differently when they're in their own dwelling.
Yes,
and
very
it's
differently.
Very tight in that space. But then you get to this amazing house that the rich family lives in, and it's very spacious. It's almost very modular.
It's modular, and it allows him to divide the frame up in different and interesting ways.
Yes.
With different vertical lines dividing the frame and having people in different sections of the frame.
And of course, really in ways that you don't realize at the beginning when you're first introduced to the house, but stairs become a very key element.
Yes.
In dividing that house from their upstairs in the midsection to the basement.
I was reading somewhere that he refers to this as his ladder movie.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's an interesting thing about the fact that whatever's going on in Korea, and that, you know, we're starting to struggle with it in this country, that there's a greater divide. The middle class has kind of disappeared, and that's what's happening in Korea. So you have people, this family isn't dumb. they're all smart and they're all cunning and they all have skills, but they are not afforded the opportunities. And so what they have to do is use those skills almost to trick the rich people into getting a job because it's the only way that they can possibly get ahead.
Okay. When I was talking about this before, I just said ladder.
Yes.
What he was actually saying is he called Snowpiercer his hallway movie.
I get it.
Snowpiercer's the hallway movie, and Parasite he refers to as his stairway movie.
And that makes sense.
And that's absolutely what it is. Yes, stairs are so key. And he plays them. Oh, man, there's that sequence where the kid's running around with a thing over his neck.
Yeah.
Around his neck. And he's running up and down, running up the stairs. He plays these moments with the little pipe dangling behind him, right? The director finds these moments and finds sort of the humor in the absurdity of it and just what it in fact means that this guy has a leash on, essentially, and is running around. He's like, yeah.
Well, there's also, and I like when you don't explain something necessarily, but then you can let the audience fill in that gap. And that is that this kid has experienced some sort of trauma that they eventually talk about. But then when you get the bigger picture or some of the revelations about the guy that's in the basement,
right,
who's been actually trying to communicate via the Morse code, is that it's probably clear that the trauma the kid experienced is he probably saw that guy sneaking upstairs one night and thought of him as a ghost.
Oh, that's exactly what that's exactly what happened. Yeah, he saw that guy. Yeah, and that was his traumatic childhood experience.
Yeah,
that he
so
saw
great.
Somebody from a lower class. Going back to the stairway thing for a minute, then you had mentioned the flood sequence. This sequence is absolutely amazing because it's the first time that you get a sense. Up until this point, you don't see the area between the two houses. You see the sub-basement and you see the nice house. But when the flood happens, they run from that house to their house.
Yes.
And they're running down stairways where sewage is literally flowing into their house.
Yeah, and it's this idea that, see, they... because remember, at the rich people's house, it's a bad storm and their kid is outside in a tent and won't come in.
Right.
And they're safe.
They're totally safe.
But down below, it's not just that they live in a sub basement, that this whole community lives sort of downstream
way
from the rich.
Way downstream. It's trickle down economics.
And of course, this is it's done subtly. It's not hitting you over the head. And I want to make that clear because it sounds the way we're describing it, that it's like so obvious. It's very, very subtly done.
It is subtly done, but I think it's important to point out about this film also is that the movie just, despite, yes, it has all these themes and all this interesting stuff going on, but on the moment-to-moment viewing, it's really entertaining. It's really funny. It's got lots of thrills and chills, and it's interesting. And so it works as an entertainment.
I think most people could go see this film and they were not going to be bothered by the subtitles. It's the second foreign film that I've seen this year that I guess could recommend to most people who would say, I don't really like subtitles.
Right.
And the first is The Farewell, and then the second is Parasite. Because it's funny, it's intriguing, there's a mystery, and for a lot of people, they'll have never seen anything like it.
They will never seen anything like it, and it is... You were talking about this sort of subgenre of movies, which I think you'd have to put in... now I'm blanking on the title of that Michael Haneke movie.
Oh, which one? All of his movies. This is the one with the one with the... That you are basically the video camera kind of thing? Cachet.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think, are there mainstream movies that are sort of about this? Like single white female came to mind.
Well, the upstairs downstairs genre.
The upstairs downstairs genre. I guess maybe this is a really good movie to watch next to Downton Abbey.
Or Gosford Park.
Or Gosford Park. Well, yeah. And that's
because there's a mystery element, but it's really about the upstairs downstairs.
Right. And this is, well...
Are you saying we're going to have to see Downton Abbey now?
Well, we might have to see it so we can compare it to Parasite. One article I was reading about this movie said that there were two main epiphanies that he had while writing the script. And the first one was the extra basement in the house.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, what elevates this movie is it could have easily just been what the first hour was. But
yes.
when they find the other basement, it adds a whole nother, and then suddenly you have the people at the bottom fighting each other over literally over scraps of food.
I mean, you know, again, it's tough. I feel like we haven't gotten to, we've spoiled it, but not so much that we could ruin every delight. But I have to say that when that doorbell rings,
yeah,
and they're all panicking, that's when you're first like, oh man, they're going to get caught. That's what yes. your first thing is. But what happens from that moment on, I couldn't have guessed that in a million years what was going to happen.
No, me neither.
It took me by such surprise because the I knew, like, as it was going on, I'm like, oh, I see where this is going, right? He first gets his sister in there, and right. then, of course, they get rid of the driver and the dad, and I'm like, that poor, the poor housemaid, she is next to go. Next. But that's it. I they're out of the picture. That's yeah. where I had no idea, and I never gave it a moment's thought that she was coming back into the picture.
Yeah, well, and that she was coming back in the way she does.
Oh my God. Like, that's so, that's where, I mean, I was just like, how rare is it that a movie is yeah. going to give me something I have not seen before?
One subtle thing I liked about her returning is that she looks completely different.
Well, something's gone on to her. Remember, she's like all bruised up in her face. Well, she's kind of been homeless. I don't think she had a place to live.
No, I don't think she did it either. But like, her hair is down. She's not in her role of...
Exactly. She's not in her uniform character. She looks exactly. almost like more like the mother than she did when yes. she was...
Well, she looks more like one of them. And yes. than she did in her uniform of her role as housekeeper.
And it takes, of course, it's moving faster than your brain can catch up with all yes. the facts, which I also like, because normally we're way ahead of what's happening in a movie.
No, and this is a movie that was way ahead of me. And then, okay, so should I give away the ending?
No, but here's what I will say, because I read a little bit about this because I did like it.
I was just going to say his second epiphany was the ending.
All right, so you read the same thing as I did, and it yeah. makes sense is that I will compare the ending of this film to the ending of Baby Driver. And what bothered me about the ending of Baby Driver is it did the American kind of ending, where it was a little confusing
right.
in its sort of fantasy, where you knew it was kind of a fantasy, but what was it saying? Because it didn't want to give you the sober dose of reality ending.
Right.
Whereas this guy... Jun Boon Ho, he recognized that it's important to know that reality is what this guy's going to face, and it's not the fantasy that he wants, that this kid is never going to get that college education.
Exactly.
And he's never yeah. going to be able to buy a house, that house, and he's never going to be able to be reunited with his father and all that stuff.
Right. And that last shot is just grim reality. And it makes a point, you know, it makes that point pretty effectively. Another movie that for some reason popped in my head because of this ending was La La Land.
Yeah. And that's why I love La La Land, because yeah. it gave you the feel, that nice feel of like, here's what the Hollywood ending would be. But
exactly. But that's not, life is not like that.
Yes. And there's another movie you haven't seen. And it's not thematic. It's a little bit different, but because of the way the house is structured and there are certain elements, and I think you need to see it, is Yorgos Lanthimos's Dogtooth.
Okay.
You see that film, and I think you'll understand what I was talking about, why it reminded me of Parasite.
Does it sort of largely take place in a house or have a house as a character in this
Yes.
way? Okay, yeah, because, you know, the other movie, of course, is Mother.
And I haven't seen that. Oh, which mother? The mother. Yes. Like the one with Darren Aronofsky's mother.
Yes.
Yes, where the house is a character.
Where the house is a character and it largely takes place in the house. There may be a subgenre here.
I was going to say that's a subgenre, as the house is as important a character as the players in it.
Yes.
You got to see Dogtooth now. I mean, okay. You want to talk yeah, about I'll... an effed up film. You see Dogtooth and then we'll come back and you're going to be like, oh, Jimmy.
Well, here's the thing about Parasite is that it's not an effed up film, right?
No. There's some parts that get a little bit extreme, but.
It's pretty mainstream and I think can appeal to a pretty broad audience, actually.
Yeah, I can see a lot of people not liking the last 10 minutes of the movie.
Well, I got to say, I was... initially sort of put off by the last 10 minutes.
Well, that's why I like that we're talking it through, because that's it. It kind of leaves you a little bit like you forget how great the movie was, because as an experience, the ending was a little bit bizarre.
The ending is a little bit bizarre. And one of the things that's bizarre that sort of initially threw me was the switch to voiceover.
Right.
And that changed sort of the way in which the film was being told. The storyteller changed their sort of point of view on the whole thing. And at first I was sort of put off by that because it was less immediate. It took me out of the action a little bit and made it more reflective. But I think ultimately that's what he was trying to get the audience to do, was to be a little bit more reflective and to look back on it a little bit. And try to find meaning from it, as opposed to, you know, sort of a nonsense.
The climax of the film wasn't the resolution. It had this like a
denouement.
Yeah, and basically it was like you said, a reflection and saying, hey, this all happened.
Yeah,
but here's the aftermath.
Exactly, and here's how we feel about it now. Here's how it's affected us and changed us, and not just the particulars of it, but sort of who we are as people. There's the hard reality of that ending next to the fantasy and realizing that there's really no class movement possible, I think is part of what this movie's saying, right?
Right.
Upward mobility in a class system is really difficult, right?
Well, I think this is why it will appeal to a lot of people here in America, because what I think people's outrage, and I'm talking about, you know, a lot of like the blue collar folks and middle class, is that they feel that no matter what they do, whatever the government does or doesn't, their situation is not going to improve.
Exactly. Yeah. And this movie is kind of saying, you're right, it's not going to improve. It's pretty bleak in that way. And there's this sort of other aspect of this that's going on throughout the movie, which the brother brings up a couple of times. At one point, he mentions that the sister fits in this life, that she fits in the house because the way he sees her in the bathtub, which is not as creepy as it sounds, but basically he sees her and he says, you know, she's taking a bubble bath or whatever. And he says, oh, you look like you fit in this house. And then later he asks the girl that he's tutoring and dating, he says, do I fit in this house? And there's this idea that you're sort of born for it or not, right? And do you fit in? Can you fit in this world? And of course, when all of these people come together at the end, it amounts to violence. When they're all on the same floor, basically, for the first time, all these priorities come out, and who people really are and what they actually value comes out in that moment through the violence. Who are we going to save in this moment? The father is literally asked, okay, who are you going to try to save? Your own family or the people you work for? So it's just, man, it's so full of material, so full of things to think about, but I can't reiterate enough how just entertaining a movie it is.
It's definitely, we still got several months to go and lots of films, but I would be shocked if it's not sitting there in my top 10 when we do a recap in 2020.
I can guarantee it will be in my top 10, along with Roland Emmerich's Midway.
Of course. all right. Well, we only have a little bit of time left, and maybe it's just a touching base, but I do want to talk about a film that I will call a hidden gem.
Yeah.
And the reason we're going to talk about it is because you finally caught up with it, and I was surprised that you had never seen it because you're a big fan of this director.
And a fan of the book.
And that is Paul Thomas Anderson's Inherent Vice.
Yeah.
And so you just saw this.
I watched it about a week ago for the first time. Yeah.
And what were your thoughts? I mean, let me just set the stages that I am an early adopter of this movie, and I think it's something that just takes years before everybody else will catch up with it. It's not an easy sell for most people because it's not your standard film. It doesn't follow the standard rules, and it doesn't have all the super quotable lines that like a Big Lebowski has.
Right.
And so people have had a hard time sort of accessing it. If they've never read the book either, I think that reading the book Which is a Pynchon novel, which already just to be able to adapt a Pynchon novel is a feat in itself. But because Pynchon is not someone that can be easily adapted, and this was probably his most accessible book,
is probably the easiest to adapt out of anything he's written.
But it's really strange is that, just the character names and all these things. You read the book, I've seen Inherent Vice several times, and then I've read the book again after like a recent watch, and it's just amazing how Paul Thomas Anderson was able to translate that book onto the screen. It's one of the great adaptions I've ever seen.
One of the great adaptions. Yeah, and he does some things to like bring in language from the book, but for some reason, and I don't know, prejudgment I had of this movie. For some reason, I'd seen a trailer years ago or something, and I thought the movie... And this is part of the reason I was resisting seeing it, I realized, is because I thought the movie was going to be more frantic in the way that Magnolia is, right? Where it's really tightly paced and the camera's flying around all over the place and it's kind of frenetic and over-energized. And I kind of expected that from this movie. And then very early on, I realized, oh, wait, that was like a cocaine movie I was thinking about. And this is, right? And this is a pot movie.
Right.
Right? And so it has this really easygoing attitude or a feeling to it where the plot is there, but you're kind of, along with the character, grasping at the plot and trying to follow things. And maybe, you just sort of space that out for a few minutes and think about something else. But it's got this really, this energy level to it that I think as an audience member, you need to tap into in order to understand this movie. And I think maybe that's why it's a hidden gem, right? It's not necessarily appealing to everyone because you've got to be on its wavelength and let it sort of wash over you a little bit because, there's something very experiential about it, but also getting into his performance is, I would say it's not an easy performance to access.
You're talking about Joaquin Phoenix's?
Yes, I'm talking about Joaquin Phoenix's performance, and it's not the easiest performance to get emotionally involved with. It was a little hard for me to tap into. By the end, I was there, but I was being a little too clinical early on, and I after recently seeing Joker, I was seeing some little flavors of that in his performance.
Well, I think that the part that's hard, and even for me when I read the book, is that Joaquin Phoenix's version of Doc Sportello, the protagonist. It's a different interpretation than I think that the book. And I feel that when Paul Thomas Anderson originally envisioned the character, it was supposed to be Robert Downey Jr. And for whatever real reason that Robert Downey Jr. dropped out, he said it was because he felt he was too old, which I think was BS.
No, that's BS.
But I feel that Robert Downey Jr. is that character.
Yeah.
And so it would have been a completely different movie. However, that's not to take away from Joaquin Phoenix. He has his own really bizarre interpretation. And if you just let yourself go and get into it, and that's where multiple viewings really help.
Exactly. Because his performance took me a little while to get into. But I think now that I know what it is and I know the tone of the movie, But, that said, I had a little trep.
Well, we had a little problem with the audio and we lost Teal. But... it's been a great episode, and we will see you next time. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us on Stuff We've Seen at Spotify or Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast content, and make sure you leave a rating and a comment, if you will. That would be great. And you can always find us on StuffWeSeen.com or on Instagram or Twitter. All right, this is... Jim signing off. Later.